Okay, welcome everyone. It's good to see you guys. Marina, Henry, Bubby, and Zadie, Dawn, Toby, Arthur, Oliver, Susan, and we got Melissa and Erwin on the phone. I barely know the last four digits of all your numbers, so I'm that good. Okay, so as my grandfather just mentioned, we had a family simcha in Brooklyn last night, which means I had roughly an hour and a half drive both ways, and that's actually making good time given the fact that I don't even know where I was. It was at the BQE, or I was like down the FDR drive and then the Battery Tunnel. It was a whole gansa zach. But on the positive side, I had time to listen to something in the car. Two things I tried doing. I tried listening to some shiurim, and I also attempted to get on the adult ed meeting last night, and it kept fizzling me in and out for some reason, so my apologies there. But I was curious. I thought to myself, hey, I'm going to be teaching Chesed and Aleph tomorrow night. It'd be interesting to hear how other rabbis have taught this one. Let's see what they come up with. And I'll tell you what, out of the three, I think I listened to, I'm not going to say names actually, but I listened to three different teachers teach this Amud out of curiosity. And apparently all of them said relatively the same thing toward the second half of this year, which is that there is some complicated material. And since I think two or three out of the teachers said that, and some of them even seemed a little iffy when they were trying to explain it, it validated my initial concern, and I just want us to manage our expectations. There will be Gemaras like you've seen already that are more agadic and easily flowing. We're going to have a little bit more of some newer concepts and a technical Gemara toward the end, but I see this as an opportunity, not just in a cheesy kind of way, but we're going to be learning some interesting new concepts tonight. The first thing we'll start off with is we picked off last time with Nedarim talking about vows. Afterwards, we'll talk about Azav, which is a sort of seminal-like emission. So all sorts of interesting things. We'll actually start all the way from the top of Chesed Av, all the way from the top of 8a, and I can confidently say it's the beginning of the art scroll to the first power, because it's the first word on the Daf, the Mishnah. We left off with this Mishnah last time, but we'll just review it now. Ein bein hamuder hanami chavira lemuder mimenu machal, ela drisas harega ukim she'ein osman ochol nefesh. So if I vow not to have any benefit from somebody, or if the way I stipulated is I formulated it as follows, I'm not going to have any food-related benefit from you. The only distinction between them is whether I can walk on someone's property or whether I can use someone's utensils that are usually given out for free that are not used for food purposes. Otherwise, even though I'm saying I'm not going to have food benefit from you, anything that could potentially give me benefit, for instance, if you give me money, that money has the potential to be used to buy food. So that would be usur to me. I wouldn't be allowed to take money from you. But the two exceptions are walking on your property and using kelim that are not food-oriented. Those two are the nafkaminas, the practical distinctions that do not relate to food. But of course, if I swore not to have any benefit from you at all whatsoever, then it would fall under that category. So the Gemara infers, of course, this seems quite straightforward. Kelim, utensils that are used for food purposes, no matter which formulation I use, whether for all benefit or food-related benefit, that would be usur to me. Next part, drisas haregel. So we noted that walking on someone's property is forbidden if someone said, I'm not going to have any hana from you. But hello, kapti inshi. Apparently, some people don't really care. They're not the type of guy who comes out with a shotgun and says, get off my lawn. This is the, in our community, I'm sure in other communities, you want to cut through someone's yard to get to shul on Shabbos. Are they makbid? Are they not makbid on it? So apparently, we're assuming is that most people are not makbid on it. You put chazi, you guys can go out and see what everyone does. Amar Rava. So the question is, why is this called benefiting from him if he lets anybody walk through his yard? Samar Rava, ha money Rei Lezer da Amar Vitor Aser b'muder Hana. Because Rabbi Eliezer says, even though It's his property. He has a right not to allow people to go on it, but he's fine. He's Mavat there. He waives that issue. He permits people to walk on his yard. Nonetheless, if in theory he could stop you and he's allowing you to walk on his yard, that is called benefiting from him nonetheless. Now, God willing, we will have time at the end of this year to address this question, but I'll put it out there for now. Zilberstein in the Chashukei Chemed asked the following question. Really, there's a first question which has a straightforward answer. The second one will be the subject of our analysis. Question number one is, if I take an oath, like we just said, and I stipulate that I will not have any benefit from Shimon whatsoever, I come into shul next week, it's Purim night, lo and behold, the guy who I took an oath not to have any benefit from, he's the guy who is laying the Megillah. So the question is, can I benefit from his Megillah reading? The Shulchan Aruch says, yes, you can, but not because you're not benefiting. Benefiting is the key word. What is hana? We say there's an important principle in halacha, mitzvos lav lehanos lehem. Very good. So and we got it. Trei kali lo shamayim, though. So mitzvos lav lehanos nitnu, which means that mitzvahs were not given over to us to benefit from. You know, if I enjoy doing a mitzvah, then I'll, do it with simcha. That's great. It'll encourage me to do more mitzvahs, but they're not given to us for personal benefit. I don't do a mitzvah just because it feels meaningful to me. If it feels meaningful, that's great. But we do it because God commanded us. So I'm commanded, God commanded us to listen to the rabbis. The rabbi said that you should listen to the Megillah. So I'm not benefiting. That's not called hana when I hear the guy laying the Megillah because I'm just fulfilling it. Unless I don't know, I always like it when the chazan gets to the icha. So maybe there's some hana over there. There's a okay. I'll allow myself one last digression, which will be my last one. I'm not sure, but there's a joke. You guys know the difference between chasidim and litvaks, right? Litvish people, chasidim. There's chasidim usually into the joy and the happiness and Litvaks are the classic more Rosh Hashiva paradigm, which is, Musser, you're all terrible people. We shouldn't have any fun in life. We should just be stocking up on mitzvahs for the next life, right? So that now you know. So the joke goes, I hope I don't botch this up, is why is it that during a few psukim in the Megillah, the laner, the Baal Kore, he reads it in the Eicha cantillation, the Eicha trump, like Asher Avadati. The answer is to give the Litvaks a little bit of Simcha on Purim also. So the question is, why don't we read the whole Megillah to the tune of Eicha? So we don't want to give them too much Simcha. So that's how it goes. Okay, I'm even yavin. So the questioner of Silverstein asks is, okay, I'm allowed to benefit from somebody. Well, because it's not benefiting. I'm allowed to listen to the Megillah.
The audio went out right at the punchline.
Sorry?
The
You can't
audio
hear me?
went out right at the punchline.
Oh no.
Oh
Can you hear me
yes.
now?
Yeah, now's better.
I didn't realize you were
And you were
that we were
saying, why
also
don't you
increasing.
read the whole Megillah in the Eichad Nigun? And then the audio went up.
So the answer is we don't want to give them too much
Okay, very good.
simcha. So that's the answer. Okay, but Reb Zilberstein, getting back, Reb Zilberstein asked, what if I took an oath not to converse with someone? So would that make a difference? Is that like a conversation of sorts? Am I considered to be, I'm listening to him, that's conversing to a certain degree. So if we have time, we will address that. It ties into Zeman, it ties into Kriyas HaTorah. So God willing, if you have time at the end of this year, we'll explore the answer to that question. Okay, moving forward to the next Mishnah. Just to remind ourselves that all these Mishnayos, you might be asking yourself, what do these have to do with Purim? The answer is absolutely nothing. I mean, I'm sure if you're a great Darshan, you could figure it out some sort of connection. But essentially, we said there's no difference between Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni, except these mitzvahs are done Adar Sheni. So now we're just going through miscellaneous Mishnayos, where there are two very similar things that share basically all rules, except for one thing that we mentioned. So these are the Ein Bein Mishnayos. Next Mishnah, Ein Bein Nedarim LeNedavos. So this is the classic chakira, the classic dichotomy of Chetza versus Gavra, of man versus thing. What does that mean? So there are two ways. If I want to donate, I want to give a carbon, I want to donate to the temple, I could say one of two things. I could say, we'll see in the Gemara in a moment, Hare Alai Ola. I am accepting upon myself, the Gavra, the person, the individual, there is an obligation to come upon me to bring a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash. The other way to formulate it is, you know, this cow Bessie over here, she served me very well throughout the years, but I want to now donate the cow, the object, the chefsa, to the temple. So what's the difference whether I say I'm going to bring an animal or I say this specific animal will be brought? One, the first one is a neder, that's on the individual. The nedava is a specific item. Ain be nedarim le nedavos, el shan nedarim chayev achar yusad, but nedavos ain o chayev achar yusad. Nedarim, if Bessie dies, it doesn't matter. I still need to bring another cow because I didn't designate a specific animal. I just said, I will bring an animal. So even if Bessie was the cow I wanted to bring, I'm still obligated to bring that korban. However, nedavos ain o chayev achar yusad, a nedava, since that specific animal is what I designated and it died, I'm not obligated to find a replacement animal because I didn't commit any other animals to bring as a carbon. That is the Mishnah. Now, the Gemara continues, Hala'inyan Baal Ta'acher Zevezesh Shavin. So Baal Ta'acher is, basically, once I commit to bring a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash, I have to bring it within Shalosh Ragam, within the three holiday span. If three holidays, meaning we're talking about Sukkot, Pesach, Shavuos, goes by, and I fail to bring that offering, then I have violated a prohibition of Baal Ta'acher of not pushing it off too far. So whether we're talking about Nedarim, whether we're talking about Nedavos, at least they're equal. They share the same rules in regards to not pushing it off too far. Let me pause for a moment. Any questions? Did I pause or just no questions? Want to make sure we're not disconnected again. Oh dear, we may have disconnected again. You guys are moving very slowly. Maybe I should take my phone off the Wi-Fi just.
No questions.
No questions. Oh, so you guys hear me again?
Yeah.
Baruch Hashem. Okay, going forward. Here we go. Tanan Hassam. You see these Mishnayos appear in different places as well. The Surah Zashatz gives us Rosh Hashanah, Vavim, and Aleph, and Miseches Kinim at the beginning. So these are repetitions. Tanan Hassam, or the ideas are repeated, and some of them actually relatively verbatim. Izu neder ha'omer, izu neder. What is a neder? I just explained this outside, but now you get the benefit of seeing it inside. Ha'omer ha'rei alai ola. A neder is when I accept the carbon on me to bring. Ezohi nedava ha'omer ha'rei zo ola. When I specify the specific item to bring, that is a nedava. What's the distinction between the two? The dar meso nivu of do. If it dies or is stolen or is lost, if it's a neder that I accept upon myself, I have to find a replacement. Nedavos meso nivu of do. But if something happens to nedavos, I don't need to find a replacement because it's on the object, not on me. Minahani mili. The Tanur Rabbanan. Where we get this from? So here we go. It says in the pasuk, "Benirtzolo lechaper alav." It should be accepted for him to atone for him by bringing the carbon. Rabbi Shimon Omer es she'alav chayev b'achar reyuso. For him, what he accepts for himself, he is obligated to find a replacement. Fest she'eno alav, that which is not to come upon him as an individual. Eino chayev b'achar reyuso, that's the nedava, which is a specific item, not an obligation upon me. My mashma, what does this imply here? All right, Yitzchak bar Avdimi came to Amar Alai command the tvay nechasei dami. That when someone accepts an obligation upon himself, it's as if he's carrying it on his shoulders and it's weighing down on him until he discharges his obligation. So that brings us to the next Mishnah. Let me pause for a moment. And you all froze on my screen, so I just want to make sure you're actually still hearing me while I'm talking.
We hear you.
You hear me? Okay, good. So you hear me and you see me, so that's great. You guys are frozen, but if you hear me, you know, you guys will look good in frozen state as well. So it's all safe as far as I'm concerned. Okay. Any questions before we go forward? Because this is going to be the now you got to put on your thinking hats. Okay. Here we go. Let's give a little bit of an introduction over here. Where do we even begin? So there is an idea that we're more familiar with. I'll start with what we might be more familiar with, hopefully a little bit at least, a Hilchos Nida, that a woman, when she menstruates, she will count seven clean, well, she does initially count seven clean days, but we treat all Nidas like they are.
She's freezing right? A little bit, in and out.
In and out?
We can't, we lost the first three words.
Oh, okay, so you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. In and out.
In and out. I don't know why my internet only gets bad.
You've got to do this from the stool.
Oh, probably got to do it. All right. You know what? After Parm, I said we're gonna restart. I'll send out an email to see who's interested. And my internet only gets bad in the evenings for the Chumash class in the morning. Was working here. Okay. Be it as it may. You hear me now?
Hey, loud and clear.
Okay. Good. So here is our introduction. So. We treat Nidas like Zavos. So what that means is, you might be familiar with the idea of Shiva Nikiyim, that a woman, after she does a Hefsik Tahara, and she ensures that she no longer is seeing a flow of blood from her period, so then she could count seven clean days where she no longer sees any flow. Afterwards, she goes to the mikvah. So there is a male equivalent called a Zav. Get it? Zava is feminine, Zav is masculine. So now, it's not some people refer to it as a seminal discharge. It's not really a seminal discharge, but something similar. Some people have identified it with gonorrhea. There's a little bit of ambiguity. But essentially, he sees this unnatural kind of emission. So if he sees it one time, then he becomes what we call a Baal Keri. A Baal Keri is just tummy until the evening. He goes to mikvah. And that's resolved pretty fast. However, if he sees two re'ios, if he sees two emissions of this kind, so then he becomes a partial zav. He's a mitzvah zav, and what that means is that he becomes tamei. He's an avatoma. He could render other things tamei as well. Even just sitting on surfaces, he can render them tamei, and he needs to count Shiva Nikiyim, seven clean days, and then he goes to mikvah. If he sees three re'iyos, he becomes a Zav Gamor. He becomes a full-on Zav. He sees three times. And by seeing three times, he now, in addition to being Tameh, in addition to counting the Shiva Nikiyim, he also has to bring a carbon at the end. If he goes to mikvah, he waits Shiva Nikiyim, he goes 7 days, and then he immerses in the mikvah, but he doesn't yet bring the carbon, so then he's called Mechusar Kapara. So you might be familiar with this actually from the beginning of Maseches Brachos. It talks about the idea of Mechusar Kapara, bringing a carbon as well. So that's what we got to know. That's a new concept. So let me just review again. One Re'ia, I'm going to use the word Re'ia a lot, by the way. Re'ia is a sight, seeing. One Re'ia, that's a Balkari. You just go to Mikvah, and then that evening, everything's great. Then two re'iyos is your tamei, you're counting Shiva Nikiyim. That's Shiva Nikiyim is not a good word to write down. I'll keep referring to it. That's seven clean days. And then if you have three re'iyos, then in addition to all that, you also bring a carbon. That's what we got to know. Very important to know these terms and ideas going in, because the whole Gemara is predicated upon it. So I'm happy to repeat anything you want me to. I want to make sure it's abundantly clear. Anything I can clarify before we go forward? Any terms, any concepts? Okay. Well, I gave you the hasra. Here we go. Now, let me put this back on the side. That was my good info for the introduction. Here is the Mishnah. how much time we have. Okay, we're doing well on time. Ein bein zav harosh ri'os l'ruah shalosh ela karban. As we just said, the only difference between a zav who has two ri'os versus three ri'os is that a third ri'ah requires bringing a karban. The Gemara says, you'll notice the Gemara keeps doing this. It makes a basic inference. But whereas rendering things tameh through laying on them, sitting on them, and counting shiva nekiyim, whether you see two times or three times, they share the same halachos. The only distinction is that a third ri'ah requires a karban on top of it. So mina hanimili, where do we get this whole distinction of two versus three, that a third brings a karban? So the Tanur Rabbanan, or Simai Omer, Mana HaKasiv Shtayim, Ukaru Tameh, Shalosh Ukaru Tameh. So this idea is brought up three times in the Torah. Two times, it uses the word two times, and then calls it Tameh. And then the third time it's brought up, it says Tameh again. So HaKetzah, what's the significance of two times, and then calling three times Tameh once more? It's to teach us that two ri'os makes you tamei for 7 days. We'll get to 7 days soon. Makes you tamei. Three ri'os on top of that requires a karban. Who's to say that? Maybe if I see two ri'os, I become tamei, but I don't bring a karban. And if I see three ri'os, I bring a karban, but at least I'm not tamei anymore. Maybe that's all what the pasuk is telling. Why do I assume that three ri'os still makes me tamei? Maybe it's only a karban. So this is an idea in halacha called bechlal mesayim month. Amrit, achelo rush shalosh rush time. Because subsumed within three ri'os is two ri'os. So if I'm already tummy after seeing, you know, in order to get to three, you first have to get to two. So if I already am tummy from two, why would I think that when I hit three, I'm any less tummy than I was before? Maybe I'll become more tummy, if that can be. So
we call that a lesser included offense.
A lesser offense. Okay. So he said, now I know how to translate Bechlal Masayim Mana. The lesser included. Usually Bechlal Masayim means within 200 is 100. Okay, but this is why we have the lawyers on in the class. You see, your expertise didn't just end in Maseches Makos.
Rabbi, I have a question.
Oh, if possible, it's like this is a bit of a train of thought. So I just want to get through this if possible. We'll get to a stopping point. I'll take your question, okay? Just for my own benefit, so I don't lose track. Thank you. The Imar Shtayim LeKarban VeLo LeTuma Shalosh Af LeTuma. Well, maybe we could turn things around. Maybe what Lepas is telling me is two ri'os requires a karban, but you're not tamei. But three then requires tuma on top of the baseline karban. So no, this should not occur to you. Why? Because we have a braisa that tells us otherwise. Tanya, that the kohen will atone to himself before God from his state of being a zav. This implies, it's not completely clear to me why this is the implication, but mixas zavin nevi'in karban, or mixas zavin in nevi'in karban. This implies some zavin have to bring a karban, some zavin don't have to bring a karban. Can you guess who's who? Haketzad, rosh shalosh mevi, shtayim in mevi. So you see three rios, you bring a karban, two, you don't have to bring a karban. Oh, eno, maybe it's the other way. Ela rab, Ella, Rabbeis, maybe. Maybe if you see two times, you bring a karban. Rav Shalosh, maybe. Maybe if you bring it three times, you don't have to bring a karban. Amrit, can you say that? Anshalo Rav Shalosh, Rav Shayim. That doesn't make any sense because, again, what was that? The lesser but included principle, Toby? Yeah, what was that called? The Bahama Simona concept, whatever it was called in English. Therefore, since two is subsumed within three, that would not be reasonable. Now, why do I need both of these teachings? Both these teachings seem to hit at the same point, which is that two ri'os makes me tamei, three on top of my tumah, I bring a karban. So we need both teachings. Itzrich Rabbi Simai, Itzrich Nizovo. We need the teaching of Rabbi Simai, and we need the teaching from the word Nizovo in the second Braisa. Deimi the Rabbi Simai, Havamina ki Kushia, Kamash Mulai, Nizovo. If all I had was the teaching of Rabbi Simai, we would have our question. What was our question? Why can you say two is for carbon and three re'eos is tuma on top of carbon? Why? How do I know that tuma is the baseline and carbon is what comes afterwards? So mizovo tells me some zavin bring a carbon, some don't, which logically leads me to say that you first become tuma from two, and then we add on a carbon for the few people that hit three sightings. The e mizovo, but if all I had was the second price of mizovo, lo yadana kama re'eos, I wouldn't know how many re'eos. Like, how do I know? Maybe it's like three, maybe it's four, maybe it's five, six. You know, where do I get the number from? So Kamash Malan throughout Sinai, because it first says two mentionings, then Tamei, then third mentioning. So that's how I get the distinction between two versus three. What's the upshot of all this? The upshot of all this is that we learn from here, from these two sources collectively, that someone who sees two re'eos becomes Tamei. Someone who sees three re'eos on top of the Tuma brings a carbon. That's the bottom line. This is a good place to pause. Phyllis, I know you had a question waiting. Thank you for your patience.
Yes, I was wondering, the Gemara infers that this Tuma is regarding transmitting impurity to a surface that he would lie or sit on. Now, mm-hmm. Is this for himself or is this for anybody else that sits on this? In other words, is he not allowed to go to shul because other people might be in his place?
Right.
What is the purpose of this?
So he is in Ava Tuma right now. So that's an origin of Tuma. And what he's going to do is, if I remember this all correctly, he's going to render the cushion a Rishon L'Tuma. I think there actually might be a special halacha about rendering if you're full Zavin Avatam, and you check it up. But usually what happens, in general halacha, we'll just say to be safe, is that every time Tuma transfers, it goes down a degree. So if I'm an Avatam, I'm the origin of Tuma, the next thing I touch is a Rishon L'Tuma. So that's one degree removed, and it's one degree less in potency. So I believe with that, you can be metame food items, you can be metame other such things, but I don't believe you'd be able to then be metame another human being based on that. So
I was thinking specifically about a Kohen sitting on that chair afterwards.
Yeah. So I
don't see if it's only for himself, what does it really mean?
No, right. So, I mean, this is an issue for like any guest he has over. You know, if you render that cushion tame, if you have a cushion, let's say, that has avatama status, so anyone who sits on there. Now, a Kohen in particular, the issue is becoming tame lemace. He is becoming tame from
beast.
Yeah, that's the primary issue. In theory, a Kohen doesn't want to become tame in general because he wants the truma, he wants the other gifts that he receives. But the tuma that's forbidden for him to contract is tuma from a mace, from a deceased. Mm-hmm. That's the particular kind of tuma that they're not allowed to come in touch with. But like you said, practically they don't want to become tame for any reason because then they can't serve in the base of Mikdash, they can't eat the trumos, then it's very limiting for a kohen. Very good. Shkoa, Phyllis.
Okay. I've got a thought. Being a lawyer, I can
like you're saying being a Kohen.
in this case, being an attorney and counselor, law proctor and admiralty and all around good guy, I can reason that after two omissions you become Tamei, and on the third one, and you have to bring a korban, but on the third one you're not any more Tamei. You reach your max.
So you're saying you would. Well, you serve your time of tuma. Now you should become you should lose the tuma on the third.
No, I'm saying you still have tuma, but it doesn't get any worse. You maxed out.
Oh yeah, and that's actually you're correct. That's actually how it works. Meaning you are an avatum already. You already are maxed out. That's the whole thing.
But I'm saying, so you could argue,
you just have to bring a karma.
No, I'm saying you could, I know it's not the halakha, but you could argue that after two, you have to bring the carbon, because you were discussing whether when you have to bring a carbon. So I could argue that you have to bring it after two, not after three.
Oh, I see.
The obligation continues.
But that's the whole point. It's you can't get any more, you can't acquire any more tuma because it's you whatever. But if you have like one more time that you do it, now you get another requirement before you can become pure. Whereas after two, it's just the passage of time.
Right.
Am I getting it right?
Correct. That was right. So, right. Yep. Good thing we have the Gemara, Kamashwa, and the Gemara clarifies these halachas for us from what we would have thought. Right? That's the point of the Torah in general. We have our preconceived notions of reality, and then the Torah comes to set things straight. Okay. Moving on. Vahasha da amrit mizovo ledrasha, v'chiyatar zav mizovo, my darshis bay. So once we just figured out from the word mizovo, mizovo taught us that you don't bring a carbon for two re'iyos, but you bring a carbon for a third re'iya. It was mema'it. It qualified things. I would have thought maybe I bring a carbon for a second re'iya, kamash malon, only the third. So now that we see that we give a lot of significance to the word mizovo, where this appears elsewhere in the Torah, also should lend itself to a drasha, to learning more halachos. And indeed, that's what we're about to do. So it says, this is in Vayikra Perek Tesva Pasuk Gimel. It says, V'chiyatar hazav mizovo, v'safar lo shivas yamin l'taroso, v'chibes v'gadavar chatzis v'sar v'mayin chayim v'tahir. So it says in the Pasuk there, that when someone, a zav, becomes tahor from his ziva, he then counts seven clean days, and then he launders his garments, which became tameh, he washes his flesh, the mayim chayim. What's mayim chayim, guys? It's not just the seltzer, but it's, where do you think the seltzer got it from?
Rainwater.
Spring water is important. Now, I think actually, there might be some chumras out there. Some kind of chassidim, I forgot which one. They're machmir that they try to build a mikvah on top of a natural spring, because we treat women like not just nida but zavos. Because really, this is a whole other shir. But really, a nida min haTorah doesn't need shiva nikiyim. Doesn't need seven clean days. Just needs to be 7 days. That makes life a little bit more easier for women. But for reasons, a chumra d'Rabbi Zeira, a reason we'll get into now, women actually, this is one of the few times that you'll see in halacha that it wasn't the men, it wasn't the rabbis who imposed upon the women, but it says that the ichmiru atzman, that the women were machmir upon themselves to treat themselves like zavos. And one of the requirements is to use spring water.
These mikvah in Tzfat is on top of a spring. If you ever in Tzfat, there's...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The mikvah of the Ari in Tzfat is on top of a spring.
Yes, so I guess they didn't have all the technology we have today, so I guess they kind of had to use natural bodies of water.
Well, you could also use rainwater.
You could. You just need it takes a little bit more ingenuity to construct it properly.
Yes. The question I have is, if you're going to build a mikvah on top of a natural spring, doesn't it have to meet the minimum value in the mikvah?
A 40 sa?
Yeah.
Interesting. I think it would, but I think it still would. Yeah. It's been a while since I learned mikvahs, but that's a good question. I think it would still require 40 sa. Okay, but we stopped mid-thought over here. My mistake. We stopped mid-thought. So, what do we do with this usage of mizovo? When can he start counting? When he stops seeing. So that once he stops seeing, he's immediately allowed to start counting the Shiva Nikiyim. And this is what women do. In order to start counting their Shemen Nikiyim, they do what's called a Hefsik Tahara, which is they do an inner check of Bedika, and they ensure that there's no longer any blood coming out. So it's a similar idea here. I don't think he needs to do, I'm not even sure how it could be done, like a Hefsik Tahara of any sort. But once he sees the flow has stopped, that's when he starts counting. Mizovo. Now, that what do we use just the word Mizovo for? Velo Mizovo v'nego. So even, let's say, the guy had the total misfortune of being a Zav and a Mitzorah at the same time, of having the leprosy-like affliction of Tzaras. So even though he might not be have all the boxes checked off to stop being a Mitzorah, he's not able to purify himself from being a Mitzorah yet, but he did stop seeing flow and he can count Shemin Nikiyim and go to Mikvah, so that is okay, even though he's still not fully removing the status of Tzaras, of Tumas Tzaras from him, he's still allowed to go to Mikvah and at least to remove his status of being a Zav. Next, Mizovo v'Safar. So it's interesting that it parsed it this way. Mizovo v'Safar. So from being a Zav and counting, Limed al Zav al Shtei Rio Shetan Sfira Shiva. This is just to teach me, I may have thought that only a guy who sees three times has to count Shiva Nikiyim, right? The guy who has to bring the carbon. How do I know that the guy who sees only two times, even he needs to count seven clean days? Where do we get that from? So we get it from this pasuk, from these two words, Mizovo v'Safar, from it saying, from his Ziva status, and he will count. So why is he counting? He's counting the Shiva Nikiyim. Balo dinhu. But I can figure this out logically. In Mitame Mishkav Moshav Lo Yitan Sfira Shiva, if he is able to be Mitame, that which he lies and sits on, certainly it would make sense that he has to count Shiva Nikiyim. So why do I need a pasuk to teach me that? The answer is Shomeris Yom Kineged Yom Tochiach Shemitame Mishkav Moshav Ina Tuuna Sfiras Shiva. Because a guy only sees one Re'iyah, despite the fact that he is Tamei, he does not count Shivas Yamin, seven clean days. So it's not obvious to me, had I not had the Pasuk, it would not be obvious to me that the guy who sees two Re'iyahs has to count Shiva Nikiyim. Kamash Malan, that's why I have the Pasuk. Babata, Al Tutmal, Zet Shavu, Mishamatami, Mishkav, Moshav, Leitan Sir Shiva. Tamu Lomar, Mizovo Safar, Mitzazovo Safar, Limeid al Zabal Shte Re'iyah Shaton Sfira Shiva. That's all interesting. You know, the Gemara actually fleshed that all out. Doesn't usually explain it like that in that detail. Usually lets us read between the lines. I don't know why I did that here. But it's to tell us that since I cannot assume that being Tame means counting Shiva Nikiyim, because being seeing one Re'iyah makes me Tame, and I don't have to count Shiva Nikiyim, Kamash Malan, I have the word Mizovo to teach me that nonetheless, so it sees two Re'iyos counts Shiva Nikiyim. Good. We're almost at the end, guys. We're almost at the next Mishnah. Hang in there. We got this. Amar le Rav Papa le Abaye, Maishna hai Mizovo de Merabi be, Zavashne Re'iyos, Maishna hai Mizovo de Merabi be, Zavashne Re'iyos. You notice, we use the formulation, the word mizovo, to do two opposite things. We used it to be inclusive, to teach, to add something, to tell me that I would have thought someone who sees two re'iyos does not count 7 days. Kamash Malan, he does have to count 7 days. That's adding something to what I would have not assumed. But also, the word mizovo was used to teach me that that guy, that same guy who sees two times has to count Shiva Nikiyim, he does not have to bring a carbon. So how can the word mizovo have opposite implications? It either implies to add something or to subtract something. So how can we tell me add Shiva Nikiyim, but don't bring a carbon? It's, you know, like, what kind of word is this? It's contradictory implications here. So Amar Le, Isal Gadaitach, Hai Limute Huta Asa, Lishka Kramine. So if you're going to assume that That means Ovo would tell me that you do not need to count Shiva Nikiyim after two Re'eos. The Pasuk didn't have to say anything yet, because I assume by default you don't need to count Shiva Nikiyim. If I would have thought, well, if he's Tameh, he needs to count Shiva Nikiyim, again, like we learned earlier, Shomer Siyom Kenegan Yom Tochiyach. It's not obvious that just because you're Tameh, you have to keep Shiva Nikiyim, because the guy who counts one day doesn't need to count Shiva Nikiyim. Sees one time, doesn't need to count Shiva Nikiyim. Maybe the word mizovo, it's already taken up. We have a need for it, but it's already being used to teach me mizovo, as we learned earlier. And even though you're not being healed, even though you're not being purified from your tumah, from your tzaraas, you're still allowed to go to mikvah and at least remove completely the ziva status. So in Cain, he tarzav lishto. The apostle could have formulated it differently. I could have left out the word mizovo. So what's mizovo come to teach me? Mizovo lamali limid al zav bal shnei reios shetan sfiras shiva. So the word mizovo must be coming to teach me to add on shiva nekiyim to someone who sees two reios. So let me just summarize that. The word mizovo is used in one instance to add the obligation of counting Shiva Nikiyim, but it's also used to subtract the obligation of bringing a carbon for someone who sees two Re'eos. How can Mizovo tell me to add something and take away something? You know, what's the connotation of the word? So based on the Turei Evan, who was very helpful in understanding this, we assume in general Mizovo implies, if I have no other contextual basis, Mizovo implies to take away. It's a limitation. It's a qualification. So I assume by default it's telling me that someone who sees two Re'eos does not need to bring a carbon. But what it since over here in this context of Shiva Nikiyim, there's no way to read it as subtracting, because by default I assume there is no Shiva Nikiyim. It must be coming to tell me to add Shiva Nikiyim. Thus, someone who sees two Re'eos does not bring a carbon, yet he counts Shiva Nikiyim, unlike someone who only sees one Re'eah. And that brings us to the Mishnah. Any questions?
I think what you're telling us, that the word, if it comes to teach us after three that you have to bring a carbon, there's a direct implication that before three, you don't have to bring a carbon.
Right. Are you saying, you know, how do you understand it? Is it
if it is something, then it, before the point where it is something, then that something doesn't come in.
Well, you see, our baseline, so here's the thing, our baseline assumption, you just look at the pasuk. The pasuk says,
I'm dealing with just in terms of grammar.
Yeah, so in terms of grammar, you look at the pasuk says he will bring a carbon. Now, the question is, who is bringing the carbon? I would assume by default, everyone needs to bring a carbon. So mizovo, baseline assumption is they both have to bring carbonos. Comes mizovo and tells me you, a two Re'eos does not need to bring a carbon. Because the pasuk is talking about bringing carbonos to at the end of your zav period. So that's, I understand what you're saying. We look at the pasuk, the baseline assumption is that you have to bring a carbon.
So before that, you don't.
What?
When you reach a point where you have to bring a carbon, obviously, you're adding something so that something didn't exist before that point.
Right. But that's what the pasuk says. That's our baseline assumption. All right. I wanted to get back to the question from Zilberstein, if you will indulge me. So remember, before we started going down this whole rabbit hole of talking about Zav status and Nida and all these fascinating ideas, the good thing about these A-B Mishnah is, like, look at all the things we're learning about in such a short span of time. We're getting such a general yedios, a general knowledge of different ideas that are in halacha and shas. So remember our question was, if I take an oath, I take a neder, not to converse with someone, can I listen to them laying the Megillah? So here's how it goes. If I took an oath not to converse with someone, I actually cannot do a zimun with them. Why? Because how do you start off a Zimun? You say, Rabbi's sign of Reich. You know, gentlemen, let us bless. That's conversation over there. But one might say that maybe it's different from Megillah, because Megillah, I'm not speaking directly to the people, right? If, you know, let's say, I don't know how many we'll have, like 300 people in the sanctuary on Purim night. Is that too low, too high? About right, excuse me. All right, maybe even more if we get so lucky. Hopefully it finishes in 40 minutes. That's what I'm hoping for. We'll see. Out of my control. Now, so if there's 300 people in attendance, who's to say that he's talking directly to Moshe Kurtz? He's just projecting his voice for people to hear. It's not directed to me. However, the Shach says, the Dafka Be'im Echav Lashmiyahu Deshari. So that's only when you don't want other people to hear. Meaning, if I'm having a conversation, right, Phyllis, if you and I were having a conversation, and then Gloria is listening into the conversation, so Gloria happens to be listening, I'm talking to you, Phyllis. Here, when I'm Lady Megillah, I want everyone in the room to hear the Megillah. I have general kavana to be lotzeis for anyone hearing me to be yotzei. That's like what happens when I'm blowing the shofar also. You have kavana for anyone walking by. So that might be an issue, because then he's trying to converse with me, if we may call it that. But you know what? That might actually be the heter out of here. He's not talking to anyone in particular. He's projecting his voice to the masses. It's like an idea of how vlog. He's not focusing on me. He's putting his voice out there. Anyone who wants to, you know, call comes. Anyone wants to come in and just wants to take part in the mitzvah can listen in. He writes at the end. You don't have to have a specific kavanah not to be motzi somebody. In fact, that could be problematic. It's talking about a birchas kohanim. You know, you want to bless everyone except for one guy. That's an issue. That's why we make the blessing, right, kohanim? Say, be'ahava, with love. In other words, make sure you're blessing everybody. He writes at the end, la'or zed nir demekriyas ha'torim in asara chutz me oso ploni. For Kriyas HaTorah, here's where things get dicey. Let's say it's not 300 people, but there's only 10. We have 10 men, and I make the minyan. So then we got an issue. Also, a little liquor lifnei, there are a kore gamo so adam. Because since I make the minyan, and you need a minyan to read the Torah, we can't apply the logic that you're just reading the Torah for anyone to come and listen. Because in order to do Kriyas HaTorah, you need a minyan to do a proper halakhic Kriyas HaTorah. So you can't give that svara that he's not trying to make me listen. If I'm not listening, then there's something lacking in Kriyas HaTorah. However, when it comes to Megillah in general, we assume, doesn't require a minyan. We talked about this earlier. Maybe it's not done on Yedaleh and Zman. It does require a minyan. But all that's lecharchila. But the event, you can read Megillah on your own. So Megillah, and I'm the last guy making the minyan. We could say that I'm allowed to listen to him, and he's allowed to have kavanah for me to listen in. Basically, what we learn from all this is don't take any nadarim, don't take any oaths. Chazal say bad things about people who take too many nadarim. It's not good for you. And here is but one, hopefully not practical example of where that could come up. All right, shkoyach everyone.
I could always do with Taurus Nadayim anytime I want.
Very good.
Rabbi, what's your plan for next week? And Purim, it would be Purim afternoon, so for time for the Suda with
7:30, no?
So. Okay, it's fine. I just was asking.
I will.
You know, I mean, I already told you, because I'm not going to be, you know, you might want to see how many people can make it.
All right, well, how about this? You know, guys, there will be a recording, so. I try to keep the weekly in the weekly Gemara class. I'm not saying I don't have that. That's my expectation for myself. The only two times I missed was because we had the baby in the hospital, and that it was nearly impossible. I actually tried. I was going to give the Gemara share, and then they decided to do the C-section, I think at like 7:47 or so. You look on the card, but that's what so I'm like, it was smack in the middle of the Gemara share. Like, I was going to bring my Gemara into the operating room. You know, it would have been maybe one of those good stories, but I wasn't going to go that far. But basically, I'll give this year, God willing, at 7:30. And those who can come.
I don't think Marissa or Talia would have appreciated that.
Exactly, exactly. So those who can come. Those who can't, totally understandable. We learned in the Gemara, right, that people didn't show up to the Beis Medrash one day. Why? Like, where is everybody? They're in the middle of the Purim Suda. So you don't have to cut your Purim Suda short. There will be a recording. Speaking of Shirim, I'm going to start my Sefer Echinuch Shir this Sunday morning. I know it's followed by a special tour that Susan put together.
Say 9:15 or 9:30.
It'll be
9:15 or 9:30.
It'll be 9:15.
It'll be like 8:15 for us. That's the trouble.
Oh, all right. Here, you know what? You got to. We're going to start off strong. All right. If you can make it to this Sunday morning, you can make it to any Sunday morning.
Ay.
All right.
All right. Good job,
everyone. Good job.
Thank you. Good job, everyone. Thank you.